My name's Aaron, and we're glad to have you with us in the house of God this morning. And welcome to week five of our series titled Intact, where we're really walking through the book of 1 Peter. Today we're going to pick up right where we left off last week, and we're going to take a look at two big themes, and those two big themes are hope. Anybody in there out there need hope? All right. And the other theme is holiness. Anybody out there wish you were more holy than you currently are? Yeah, I don't, but you guys probably do. At any rate, we're going to go ahead and read the text together, and then we'll get started. So turn with me to 1 Peter chapter 1. I'm in verse 13. We'll take it all the way to verse 16. Therefore, with your minds ready for action, be serious and set your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the desires of your former ignorance, but as the one who called you is holy, you also are to be holy in all your conduct. For it is written, be holy because I am holy. And so during our time together this morning, what I really want to show you is that our hope in Jesus, it's potent, it's powerful to the degree that it can absolutely transform our ambitions. And when our ambitions are transformed, our actions follow and can be transformed. And in addition to that, as our ambitions and our actions are transformed by the hope that we have in Jesus, what we end up having or finding ourselves amidst is the ability to walk in holiness. And so for the first time in this letter, Peter is going to tell us to do something. And the something that he's telling us to do is take your hope and put it absolutely, utterly, and completely on Jesus. Now, for the first 12 verses of this letter, Peter has been reminding us of who we are in Jesus, what we have in Jesus, and where we're going as a result of Jesus' finished work. So I'll just ask you, do you know who you are in Jesus? Do you know what you have in Jesus? Because here's the thing. Jesus doesn't just know you. He doesn't just know about you. He can fully relate to who you are. He doesn't just know what you're going through. He's in it with you. He's around it. He's working through it. And through it, through whatever struggle or whatever circumstance or whatever scenario you might find yourself in, he's going to work through it to provide a breakthrough in your faith, in your ability to trust Jesus for who he is. And through it, he's reorienting our values, and he's giving us something that money cannot buy, what our efforts can't earn, and something that our souls deeply desire. Jesus is capable of and is going to meet your deepest need. In Jesus, we have access to a hope that can change us from the inside out. It's a hope that does not go away. It does not dissipate or disappear. It's constant. It's forever. And it can change absolutely everything. So I asked this earlier, is there anybody out there that needs hope? All right, so three people need hope. All right, the rest of you, hopefully by the end of this, you'll need some hope. Not as a result of anything I'm going to say. Are you living in a world that needs hope? Let me ask you that. All right, now zoom in even further. Do you know someone? Do you have someone in your life that you deeply care about? You care about them. You're brokenhearted for them because they're far from God, and you want to see them come close to God. And what you're imagining for them, hopefully this is what you're imagining for them, is that their life could be markedly better than what it currently is. And I'm not talking about because they're going to walk away from some habit that they have or stop shooting heroin or stop sleeping with their significant other. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about walking out of a bad habit. I'm talking about walking in from a hopeless scenario into a hope-filled scenario. And what in the back of your mind, all you're dreaming about is if they only had hope in Jesus, this life-changing certainty that's able to deliver a deep satisfaction, if they only had that, their life would be markedly better. You see, in Jesus, hope is a life-changing certainty. It's not wishful thinking. It's not optimism. It's not, you know, we throw that word around all the time as if we have like good goals and good priorities and we know what that word means. But in Jesus, it is a life-changing certainty. And a certainty is something that is going to happen regardless of the scenario. It's something that cannot be stopped. And so in Jesus, essentially what we have is we have everything that we need to navigate the hopelessness that we seem to experience because of the things that life throws our way. In Jesus, we have a certain hope because he's promised to never leave or forsake us. So if Jesus is in you, hope is what you have access to, and that can change absolutely everything. But the first thing that we're going to zoom in on this morning that I believe hope has the ability or the potency to change is our ambitions. Listen to verse 13. It says, "Therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." So you might be thinking that, you know, hopes and ambitions are cut from the same cloth, that they're the same thing. So I'd like to break this down for you a little bit. Hope is a life-shaping expectation. And in Jesus, it's not just an expectation, it's a certainty. But an ambition is a little bit different in that it is the determination. It's a determination to achieve something. It's a determination to get up out of your seat and do something about it. To pursue a goal, to go after it, to leave it all on the field in pursuit of your goal. And in a sense, our hope is really what provides the fuel for our ambitions. Because hope is believing that something can happen, and an ambition is the determination to actually do it. So let me give you a little object lesson here. A few weeks ago, my family and I, and this was after my wife and I collaborated together, and we came to the conclusion that us plus five kids needed something else. And the something else is a 10-week-old puppy. Are you allowed to smile when you hear the word puppy? All right? And so right now we have a puppy in our home, okay? Don't stop judging me, okay? And my hope with this puppy is that it would follow in the footsteps of many puppies that have gone before it, and it will be housebroken. Like, it will stop using my house as a bathroom. Are you tracking with me? All right, and I can leave it at that. I can be hopeful. I can have hope that the puppy's going to be housebroken, but I got to chase that with something. I got to chase that with the ambition, the drive, the action, the practical step forward to actually housebreak this puppy. And I can tell you this, I am not the weakest link. My wife is not the weakest link. We got little people that think that dog needs free reign of the world. And when you ask them why they let him out of his crate, they're like, well, he wanted to come out. At any rate, I am hopeful, right? And we can all be hopeful about all kinds of things. But at a certain point in time, hope has to translate to ambition. And ambition is determination to do something about it. And so Peter, what I believe he's trying to do is he's trying to help develop an inner attitude in Jesus followers. An inner attitude of hope that will transform the way that you think, that will completely change your perspective. And in so doing, as your ambitions change, your actions will be transformed. And so in essence, Peter is saying, roll up your sleeves, church. Put your hope completely on the hope that you have in Jesus so that your life is marked by an ambitious pursuit of Jesus and Jesus' mission. And you might be thinking, thanks, Peter, but I'm going through it right now. I'm being pressed in from all angles. And just so you know, you're in good company, because we live amidst a culture that is really going through a hope crisis, in that we're a culture that's really marked more by hopelessness than we are hope. We have more people wrestling with depression and anxiety and fear and loneliness and hopelessness than any culture that's ever gone before us. And you know this. You're out there in the workplace. You're interacting with people. And maybe this is you. Maybe this is how you feel. Because we've just watched two states that we love and a U.S. territory get hammered by hurricanes. And thanks for your generosity this morning in helping us provide a degree of relief through that. But we watched that, and then just a week ago, we watched things just get tumultuous on a whole nother level in Las Vegas. And scenarios like that can tend to give us a sense of hopelessness in that we feel powerless to do anything about it. But let me just say this. I think more important than what causes us to feel hopeless is the outcome of hopelessness. Because in essence, here's what hopelessness does. It kills ambition. It destroys it. It stops us in our tracks, because we end up feeling so trapped in the past that we cannot even begin to imagine a future that will be any different. Hopelessness, it tells us that we're too broken to ever be whole. We're too far gone to ever be loved by God. We're not good enough. Nothing's ever going to change. We're not smart enough or wealthy enough or big enough or strong enough to make a difference. And that's hopelessness settling in, and that's exactly where ambitions die. Just a few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to do some volunteer work, a very short stint. So don't see me as like this guru volunteer, because I'm not. I'm not going to pretend to be that. But I had this like 3-hour window where I went into a city that you all are familiar of. It's the city of Baltimore. A place called Pigtown. Maybe you're familiar with it, maybe you're not. If not, read the history on it, because there's a reason why it's called Pigtown. And I won't get into that. But I drove up there in my car from my home. And in a sense, I drove in this little like tunnel of security that I have, my house, my car, my financial situation, the social capital that I have in my family and my church family, the healthy relationships that I have with people in this church. And I drove into a scenario that was markedly different than my life, in that I'm volunteering at a place that does outreach to homeless people. People that are downtrodden. People that had, maybe at one point in time, had something and now they have literally nothing. And I can tell you this, that not one of those people signed up for that. I've yet to meet a person that when you ask them what their dream is, you ask a kid what they want to be when they grow up. I have yet to meet a kid that says, you know what I want to be when I grow up? I want to have no relationship with another human being. I want to be living in a scenario in which I don't, like, people don't refer to me by name because they're terrified of me because I operate on a street corner begging for money. I want to be addicted to drugs. I want to be downtrodden and outcast and forgotten. I've never met a person that wants to be that. But by way of circumstance, that's what's going on in the lives of these people. And so we kicked off the thing with a tour of these facilities. And it's a pretty holistic approach to people, in that there's job training. There's, you know, they teach interview skills. They help people prepare for the GED exam and actually take the GED exam. And through this tour, we were asked a barrage of questions such as, why do you think we do this? And your mind wanders and you're like, well, you just, like, you love people. And that's a generic answer. But the reality was, their main goal, the main prerogative, was they are trying to restore dignity, human dignity. They want people to feel like people when they show up there. But bigger than that, they're trying to restore a sense of hope. Because hope gives you the footing to take the next step. And so they're dealing with people that have had door after door after door slammed in their face. And in essence, as doors are slammed in your face, your ambitions die, and eventually you give up because you lose hope. you have no sight of a future that's any different than your present. And Jesus is trying to change that. And Peter here is talking to a people who run the risk, because of their circumstances, of losing sight of the hope that they have in Jesus and losing sight of the ambition that they have to follow Jesus. And losing sight of the charge that they have to deliver hope to a hopeless world. He wants them to know that ultimate hope is fully present in Jesus. And here's what that means. Hope is being convinced, simply stated, that Jesus just is not done. He's not finished. He's not done delivering hope to the hopeless or making broken people whole or delivering good news to the poor. He's not done healing the brokenhearted. He's not finished with that work. He's not done proclaiming freedom to the captive. And get this, he's not done using sinners like you and me to get the work done. He is not done doing that. Hope, as simply as I can state it, is just believing that regardless of where you are, Jesus is not finished. And so Peter, in essence, is saying, obsess. Obsess over the gospel, the fact that we are more sinful and broken than we are willing to admit or even willing to imagine, and that we are more loved than we would ever dare to believe. He's saying, obsess over the fact that you're a child of God. Your identity has been completely transformed. Obsess over the fact that you have a future and an inheritance. That this is not all you get. We're just temporary residents passing through. Peter is saying, let this overwhelm your intellect. Let it get deeply in your mind so that it sinks down into your heart. That Jesus was raised from the dead. We've been given a brand new life. We have everything to live for, including a future. And part of the future actually starts now, because God is carefully keeping watch over us. He's securing us now and for the future. And the day is coming. There is a day coming. And it might come now where you have your breakthrough, but your ultimate breakthrough is coming when your life will be completely whole and healed and full. That's what Peter's getting at. And he's saying, let this motivate you. Get ready. Be prepared for action. Let this transform your ambitions. Let this allow you to become someone who is known as a hope dealer. Someone who doesn't retreat when they see hopelessness, but someone who, just as Jesus did, presses in to hopeless scenarios and delivers hope, realizing that you once were without hope. Become a person who gives relief to a hopeless world, because that's exactly what Jesus did for you. Look, if your hope is completely in Jesus, your ambition, your biggest ambition in life is no longer you. Your biggest ambition in life is Jesus and Jesus' mission. And Jesus' mission is to make disciples by delivering hope to a hopeless world. But hope doesn't just transform our ambitions. Our hope transforms our actions. Listen to verse 13. It says, therefore, preparing your minds for action. And then we skip up to 14. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the desires of your former ignorance. Be holy in all your conduct. Anybody feel encouraged by that? Be holy in all your conduct? When Peter says, prepare your minds for action, this is what he's saying. He's saying, take that shirt you got on, roll up the sleeves, and get ready to do work. Don't just think about who you are in Jesus. We spend a lot of time doing that. It's time to actually act on it. It's time to do something. Let your identity in Jesus mobilize you to participate in Jesus' mission. Because following Jesus is not just what you do with your mind, it's what you do with your life. And being conformed to our ambitions, it only happens when you actually act on them. I mean, you ever met somebody that, like, they had the best laid plans ever and they've never acted on one of them? I mean, they don't have to be complex plans. Maybe it's like a workout program or like just like a diet, something they're going to do, and they gear up and they talk about it and they think about it and they're consumed with it up here. But it does not become a reality. Your idea doesn't become a reality. Your ambition never becomes a reality apart from action. And Paul is saying, don't let your belief in Jesus die in your mind. Let it sink down into your heart and be mobilized. So let me ask you this, because I believe that our ambitions, they're like the catalyst for our actions. What we desire to do pretty much is what we end up pursuing. And so what's your greatest ambition? Are you more ambitious about the gospel or your opinion? Are you more ambitious about Jesus' mission, Jesus' purpose, or your priorities? Look, some of us, and I self included, we have got to let our ambitions die if we're going to bring hope to the world. If we're going to go all in with Jesus and effectively make disciples. Because I don't know about you, but the people that I'm hanging out with, the people that I'm doing life with, I don't think that they need another opinion. What I do think they need is to know where they can find a hope that does not fail, a hope that will deliver through the craziest of life circumstances, a hope that will not disappoint. So regardless of where you're at in life, here's what I think Peter is telling us. That Jesus can transform our ambitions and in so doing transform our actions. I'm going to tell you a story. I got any baseball fans in the house? I like how we just raise hands. We're not like, yeah. At any rate, I'm a baseball fan from the age of 5. I would get on the diamond and my dad actually pushed me to do this at age 5. I remember standing on the first baseline as a 5-year-old and being like, no, I'm not good enough. The tee's too high. Dad, have you seen how short, tall? I mean, I don't know what I am. At any rate, I'm weeping and he's like, hey, son, we go all in. And I'm like, okay, Dad. At any rate, yeah, that was a step of faith. I didn't even know it. He was in what he really was saying is, hey, son, on the other side of pain is purpose and whatever. That's not the point. At any rate, I ended up playing ball through college. And I can tell you this, it was an ambition. It was an ambition. It became an ambition. Like, my vision for life was to play ball. Like, that was it. And so that translated to, and my dad resourced my ambition well, which was really helpful. Because sometimes if you have an ambition and you don't have the resources, it just dies. But this didn't die because my parents resourced my ambition. And so here's what it translated to. Like, being totally consumed with it. Measuring myself by it. Anybody else tracking with me? If it's not baseball for you, it's something. It's something that you measure yourself by. And so from the age 5, I learned how to do math, not because I loved math, but because I wanted to know my batting average. Okay? I went to school not because I loved school, but because school was like the welcome mat to the baseball field. Like, that's what it was, because you can't drop out of school and be on the high school team. You tracking with me? All right, so my pursuit, it was reckless. It consumed me. There was a point in my life where pretty much every down moment that I have was devoted to a baseball field. It was devoted to fielding a ground ball or hitting a pitched ball. It was devoted to me preparing for a life that I thought I was going to live as a professional athlete. And here's what ended up happening. And granted, I'm measuring my identity through this all the way. So you're 0 for 4. Your identity is like, pfft. You're 4 for 4, you're living on top of the world. But the reality is there's always another at bat, there's always another game, and there's always an end in sight in that physically what you're doing today, you cannot do. You're not going to be able to do someday. And so Peter is trying to show us that if our identity, if our ambition is not pointed, directed at, stemming from a hope that is bigger than us, that does not go away, there's a day gonna come when we're gonna just be wrecked. And that day came for me. I was a junior in college. I went for a ball up the middle like I had done a million times. That was actually one of my favorite plays. It was one of the easiest because it was just a quick grab it and go and pretend like you're a professional. I went for the ball like I normally did, and my hamstring snapped. And I fell to the ground, and I tried to get up because I'm super tough. Mm-hmm. And I could not get up. My leg was stuck in a 90-degree angle, and the next thing you know, I'm being carried off the field. That's the last time I tied my spikes and played in a ball game. From there on, I can tell you this. My life was a train wreck, okay? I got involved in some things because where I was drawing my hope, the hope at being something, the hope at being somebody, and where my ambition was directed, the actions I was taking to get to that hope, they were all gone. The roadmap was gone for me. And so I spent a good year and a half, and I probably have smoked more pot than anybody in this room. You can laugh if you want. I'm not proud of that, but I'm saying I turned to all kinds of things. I turned to substances. I turned to relationships. Because I was trying to recreate an identity that I had completely lost. And then lo and behold, this man called Jesus introduced himself to me through the gospel accounts. And I was being steeped. I don't know how many times I read the gospels. And all I saw was, I can rest my life on something that doesn't go away. Because a baseball career goes away. A lucrative career has an end. But the hope that we have in Jesus is constant and it's ongoing. And when I met Jesus, my desires changed, my ambitions changed, and my actions changed. And after I, took the last puff of the last joint and started actually following Jesus, my life took a drastic turn. And I spent a couple of years trying to deliver hope to hopeless people. It started in the city of Washington, D.C., where I was just doing whatever I could to reach people. And then that translated to me spending a couple years on the mission field and interacting with people like the folks I saw in Baltimore. And all I was trying to do is be Jesus with skin on, deliver hope in a hopeless scenario. Prior to that, however, I was my greatest ambition. And maybe you can relate to that. It was my needs, my wants, my goals. And the reality was this, that some, I'll even take it as far as all of my ambitions had to die. And Jesus loves me so much that he sacrificed them for me. He killed my ambitions for me because he knew I wouldn't. And until your ambition for Jesus changes, you're gonna walk with a limp and you're not gonna be able to deliver hope to a hopeless world. Because hope in Jesus, it can transform our self-centered, egocentric, misguided, misinformed ambitions and give us a holy ambition that translates to a gritty determination and a practical action that delivers hope to a hopeless world. But our hope doesn't just transform our ambitions and our actions. It actually allows us to walk in holiness. So listen to verses 15 through 16. It says, "But as the one who called you is holy, you are also holy in all your conduct. For it is written, be holy because I am holy." I'm going to level with you out the gate. This sounds extremely intimidating. Be holy. I mean, if we could do that, we would have done that. We didn't do that. Jesus did that for us. Here we are today. So let me just break this down a little bit. Peter's quoting an Old Testament book. It's called Leviticus, which is no less intimidating by way of rules. And here he's using the main Hebrew term for holiness. And it means to cut away or to separate. And so Leviticus, it's a book that's filled with so many rules and regulations. If you're type A, it's going to make your head spin off because you're like, how am I ever going to do that? And all you're going to do is feel guilty trying to do that. It'll leave you sweating bullets. But here's the scoop on why God gives laws. What appears to be restraint from God by way of laws is always intended to provide a way of rescue. Leviticus gives us guardrails that feel very much like restraints, but they are God's means of rescue. So when holiness, when it refers to God, here's what it means. He's off the charts. We don't have we can't create an image of God that really captures the essence of who God is. He destroys our categories because he's transcendently above us. Isaiah says that God's ways are above our ways. His thoughts are above our thoughts. That's it. We can't get there intellectually. We can't get there emotionally. We can't get there spiritually to understand comprehensively and exhaustively who God is. So when we hear Jesus refer to God as Father, here's what that means. It means that God is an exponentially better father than any of the father figures that we've ever experienced in our lives. So if your dad crushed it, or if you're crushing it as a dad, God can do all that and then sometimes a gazillion, gajillion, whatever, if there's even a number that captures the essence of God, there's not. But God can do far above and beyond the best efforts of any father out there. And if your dad, if your father inflicted pain on you, abandoned you, hurt you, left you behind, left you feeling rejected and scarred and wounded, hear this, God is not that kind of father. When we hear that God is holy, here's what it means. He's more amazing than we could ever imagine, and we are more loved as a result of that than we could ever begin to fathom. Can I get an amen? Amen. So when Peter says, be holy as God is holy to sinful, broken people like me and like you, what he's doing is he's connecting us to God. He's taking us and he's saying, hey, I'm gonna connect you to God. He's showing us that God has made us exclusively his. It means we've been rescued. It means we've been cut away from the old identity that we had, and we've been given a new identity in Jesus. We've been cut apart from our old sinful identity, and we've been given a brand new identity in Jesus. And look, being called to holiness does not mean that you've got something to prove. What it means is you can finally live as if you have nothing to prove. Because here's where we go when we think of holiness. We think compliance. We think rules, regulations, standards. But walking in holiness is much deeper than living up to a set of standards. And the reason I say that is God is holy and he's not a set of standards. He's a person. And he's calling us not to compliance, but to completeness. Walking in holiness, it's not a practice, it's a posture. It's a call to a different way of life, a way of life that God himself designed with yours and mine, best interests in mind. It's consistent with his character. It's consistent with healthy relationships and healthy behavior. It's a way of life designed to make us whole. It's a way of life designed to help us intimately identify with God and be transformed by his perfect character. Look, walking in holiness, I'm convinced that it's the only way to live a life more potent and purposeful than anything you've ever imagined. Because it's a way of life specifically designed by God. When God invites broken people into holiness, he's inviting us into wholeness. He's giving us everything that we need to shed the scars of our past, to shed the sin, and to pursue our future in Jesus. Holiness is God's way of inviting us to victory, to courage, and to freedom. It's the antidote to our weakness. It's the answer to our brokenness and our inability, despite our best efforts, to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. or failed attempt after failed attempt to fix ourselves. Holiness is not a wall that keeps us out. It's an invitation that brings us in. Holiness is how God approached us in Jesus. Holiness is what caused God to press in, to enter the mess of our lives. And not to condemn us for making the mess, but to clean up the mess on our behalf. Listen to what it says in Leviticus 20:26. It says, "You are to be holy to me because I, Yahweh, am holy." Now hear this. "I have set you apart from the nations to be mine." God doesn't say, "Be holy, you're holy because you earned it." He says, "You're holy because you're exclusively mine." For us, here and now, holiness, it's never gonna be absence of sin in our lives. It's the presence of Jesus in our lives, empowering us to walk away from our old identity, our sinful identity, and to walk in our new holy identity in Jesus. Holiness is an outcome, it's not an obstacle. You and I do not have the bandwidth, nor the capacity, nor the ability to make ourselves holy, but Jesus does. Because of Jesus, we are holy. And the only way to get there, I am convinced of this, the only way to get to the point where you can walk in holiness is surrender. Listen to verse 14 and 15. It says, "Do not be conformed to the desire of your former ignorance." It says, walk away from your old life. Surrender. "But as the one who called you is holy, you are also to be holy in all your conduct." Live out of your new identity. Put all of your hope in Jesus and watch him transform you from the inside out. Watch him satisfy you like you've never been satisfied, like nothing you've ever pursued has ever been able to satisfy you. Walking in holiness will satisfy you in a way that you've never been satisfied, in a way that your soul wants to be satisfied. It's gonna give you a sense of purpose exponentially greater than any purpose you could come up with on your own. It's gonna allow you to unseat fear in your life and begin delivering hope to the people in your community, the people in your sphere of influence. It's gonna allow you to rise up out of your seat and provide relief to a hurting world. It's gonna allow you to function as God's ambassador, loving your enemies, loving and forgiving the people who hurt you. It's gonna allow you to use your life to give life to others, because holiness does not cower, it's courageous. And holiness, it's gonna allow you to stop faking it, stop pretending like you're somebody that you're not, and start walking in the freedom that you absolutely have in Jesus. For some of us, the first move we need to make to walk in holiness is this. You're gonna have to surrender. You're gonna just have to admit that you're wrong. You're gonna have to admit that you've tried to find hope and purpose and identity in your career, in your kids, in your possessions, in your asset portfolio. You're gonna have to admit that. You're gonna have to surrender. You're gonna have to admit that you're clinging to sin in your life, because maybe that's a thing that you're doing. We're gonna have to admit that we struggle to love people who are different than us. That we have trust issues, that we've hurt people, that we've been hurt. We're gonna have to get honest about who you are. And I'll tell you this, there's a great place where you can do that. It's called small group, because those are small communities of people, and they're committed to God, and they're committed to growing together in faith. And they're committed to providing a safe place where people can talk through what they're going through. It's a place where absolutely nobody's perfect, but everybody can belong, where honesty is absolutely welcomed, and you don't have to be terrified of receiving harsh judgment, because it's a support network of people who will listen to you and pray with you and pray for you and go through life with you. Now, I'll just say this, and I'm wrapping this up here. Ultimately, we're defined. I think we're defined by what we decide to hang on to. We're defined by what we won't let go of. And holiness is hanging on to Jesus, putting all your hope in Jesus and letting go of the sin in your life and the past and everything that's holding you back and left you feeling hopeless. It's letting go of your life and walking in His. It's letting go of hate and walking in love. It's letting go of the bitterness that besets you, that holds you back, that works against you, and walking in forgiveness. It's letting go of guilt and walking in freedom. It's letting go of your opinion and walking in purpose. It's letting go of who you wish you were and walking in who you are in Jesus. It's letting go of trying to protect your identity and allowing Jesus to give you an identity. It's letting go of trying to be right and trying to prove everybody wrong, and instead trying to win people with the love and the hope of Jesus. Look, some of us think that holiness it requires that we function as God's lawyer. And so we tend to call people out who are not living a holy life or lives that we don't believe align with the one that God would have them live. But holiness means being God's ambassador. It means welcoming people in. It means letting go of what we think we can get out of people and being driven by what we have to give people, which is the hope of Jesus. Look, Jesus didn't come here to tell us to be holy. That'd have been a nightmare. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if Jesus came and said, hey, be holy, and then he just broke camp? I mean, I'm out. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna go try to play baseball again, I guess. But that is not hope. That is not a hopeful scenario. Jesus didn't come to tell us to be holy. He came to make us holy. And because of Jesus' finished work, because when he went to Calvary and he bore your shame and he bore your sin and he bore your guilt, he made you holy. Because of Jesus, we can walk in holiness. Because of Jesus, you are fully loved and fully accepted. You have nothing to prove. You have nothing to earn. In Jesus, you have the freedom to succeed. And you have the freedom to fail because you're no longer measured by what you accomplished or what you failed to accomplish. You're measured by what Jesus accomplished. You're measured by Jesus' holiness. And because of Jesus' holiness, our hope is intact. Amen.